This is the Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
It seems like the Heat this year, with the way that they're built, they have a lot to prove, and I think that they could potentially be the 2 seed in the East.
Kevin Rayfuse.
It's October 28th. The Spurs play the Thunder. And so you got Lamar Saldridge making his debut with San Antonio. You've got Kevin Durant, first game back, coming off foot surgery. You know, we know these teams have battled before, twice in the Western Conference Finals.
And Justin Cousart.
You got to get somebody around Davis. Maybe some guards that can get on the ball, so not Lance Stevens.
Let's go.
So this week on the Drive and Dish, I guess I'll just start it off by saying we're actually releasing the midweek first, then we'll put up our actual division preview, which is the Atlantic division preview this week. But Kevin is gone for this episode. He'll be on next episode. But before he left, he found 6 reasons why he thinks that he is better than us.
Yeah. What a jerk. He sends it, and it's 6 scientific reasons being single is better than in a relationship. And, well, as you now can tell, me and Tim are in relationships. Kevin is not, so he is thinks he's better than us. And these are the 6 reasons why, Tim. Let's see if you agree, okay? Reason number 1, apparently, single people exercise more. Now, do you agree?
I absolutely agree with this. I found that when I am dating somebody, all of a sudden, that 4-day-a-week gym routine they had,
is rough.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm going once a week. In fact, I recently was dating somebody who was riding her bike to work every day.
No, I'm not.
Until we started dating each other.
The thing is, like, once you're in a relationship, people say you're no longer trying to impress somebody. So, like, I could see that. I mean, I still go to the gym every single day. I'm in the gym every day. But that's because, like, if I don't, I get, like, I physically feel depressed. So I go to the gym. All right. Number 2. Number 2, single people are more likely to find jobs. I don't know how much I agree with that one.
I think that's probably true, because let's say that you're with somebody and they're the breadwinner. I'm not going to say which sex that might be,
yeah.
But I'm saying if you're with somebody and the other person's the breadwinner, you might be less inclined to go out and find a job. However, if you're the male and you're with somebody, it seems like you'd be more inclined to
find a job
because you got to take your lady out to dinner, because dating is not cheap.
Unless she's just going to pay for it, if she's got the money.
Yeah, but I mean, do you really, like, let's say you and your lady go out to dinner,
okay,
and she goes to pay for it. I don't like that.
I mean, I usually will just pay because it's like, I feel like that's just the right thing to do.
Right.
Personally, so I don't know. But if they were persistent about it, I wouldn't. I'd be like, okay, like if you feel that you need to pay or you want to pay, whatever, then fine.
I appreciate when they pretend to grab for the check.
Of course you do. Number 3, single people get more sleep.
Absolutely true, without a question.
Yeah, I agree. 4, people who live alone are more independent. I mean, I feel like that kind of is that's like calling an orange orange. If you live alone, you're independent. Of course.
Orange. It's not orange. It's orange.
I drink orange juice.
Orange juice.
Orange.
I drink orange juice.
Orange. And the last reason is single people are less likely to be in debt. Probably true. I mean, I feel like if you're going out, like we were saying, you pay for food, you're paying for 2 people. I feel like I would want, and I do want to spoil my, you know, my lady friend. Like, I want to buy her things and give her gifts and, you know, birthdays and stuff like that. So I'm more likely to spend more money than I would if I didn't have one.
My ball hates my furniture. Hates it. She says it looks dreary. I think it's a nice brown wood color.
It's a little hipstery.
It's not hipstery.
It's a bit hipstery.
It's a nice brown wood color. She doesn't like the color brown, apparently, but I think wood is a very pretty color. It's a very nice color. But I can see how if you're living with somebody, they might try and poke you into, let's say, having more expensive furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Having maybe a bigger TV, and all that could acclimate into
debt. Yes, I agree. So those are the 6 reasons why Kevin thinks he's better than us. So.
Well, Kevin might be right.
Well, fair.
But you are listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Again, Kevin is not here this week. He will be with us on Wednesday. I am Tim Tompkins. In front of me, right to my front, is our producer.
A little to the left.
I feel like there was a joke somewhere in there. Our producer, Justin Cousart. So every week we like to list an iTunes review. And we don't do this because we're narcissistic. It really does help us move up the ranks on iTunes. And it's really easy to do. So if you listen to us on your iPhone, when you have the podcast app open, all you have to do is click the little review button, leave a review while you're listening to the show right now. While you're listening to the show, do it. It only takes a minute. It's as easy as sending someone a text message, and we read them. We aren't narcissistic. They really are funny. And so this week we're highlighting a new one.
Yes, we got one from the United Kingdom this time. It's 5 stars.
Is this our first United Kingdom one?
No, I think it's our second or third.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's by Mikey TDUFC. He says, absolutely fantastic, hilarious, and insightful in equal measures. Great listen for an NBA fan across the pond in Scotland.
Well, Michael, I'm not sure that it's equally hilarious as it is insightful.
I feel like we're more funny than insightful.
Yeah, we're more funny than insightful.
That's fine with me. I'm okay with that.
At least I think so.
All right.
But thank you so much for the review, and we hope that the winter is treating you well in Scotland.
And of course, if you get over to our Facebook page right now, we are enlisting. I guess I'm going to call it enlisting. We're enlisting for fantasy basketball or for a fantasy basketball league. So if you want to join, just head over to our Facebook. It's the top post on it. You just leave your email and we'll figure out a way to get in touch with the people that are lucky enough to get in the league with us.
Yeah, but you have to like the Facebook page first.
Yes.
We will
look into that.
Yes, you have to like the Facebook page, then just leave your email. It's a top post on our Facebook page. Just search Drive and Dish. So, Justin, Kevin and I were talking, and because we've had all these people that want to do the fantasy league with us, is that we're thinking about doing, and we have to get your approval first, of course.
Of course.
But we have to do two different, we were thinking about doing two different leagues, one head-to-head and one roto.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine with me.
I love roto. I haven't done roto in 2 years. I'm so excited.
My thing is, like, I have like 4 fantasy football teams, so I just love doing fantasy stuff. And I actually even created a FanDuel account, so I'm down.
Oh, I don't like that FanDuel crap.
I only did it more for, I put in $1.
Yeah. So. When I was doing it, it took away the joy I was getting out of basketball.
But that's the thing, is like, I didn't download the app, so I'm not going to be able to check it until, you know, the Monday of, or the Monday morning, or the, I guess, Tuesday morning.
Depending. And it's a little bit different with football, because you're doing weekly, right?
Yeah. Well, no, it's just, yeah, it's just one every week.
Right.
So I don't have to, like, I pick it on Tuesday, and then I don't look at it until Tuesday.
So. Yeah, with basketball, it's every day, so I found
myself. You
don't
have to.
Well, you don't?
No, FanDuel said if you don't want to play one day, you don't have to.
Right. Well, I mean, you aren't doing weekly. I think I'd be more inclined to do it with basketball if it was weekly.
Yeah. Just like pick a player and out of the whole week, however that person does in all the games that he plays.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd be able to find who's playing the most games, though. So then, but that could be a strategy.
And it is an actual.
It is.
Yeah.
But let's get into some news.
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know.
Now, if you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in the news, Jerry West says this may not be Kobe's last season. We'll have to see. Apparently, Sixers player Kendall Marshall will not be ready for the start of the season. Kendrick Perkins compared Anthony Davis to Kevin Garnett and Kevin Durant. He said he's got a lot of Kevin Garnett and a lot of Kevin Durant in him. Timberwolves have signed Nick Wiggins. He is the brother of Andrew Wiggins. And Michael Carter Williams threw out the first pitch at a baseball game and hit a cameraman. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
And welcoming on the line right now, we have Cal Lee, the creator and co-host of the Baseline NBA podcast. You can hit him up on Twitter anytime at Gameface Lee, friend of the show. I think it's been about a year since you've been on. Is that correct, Cal?
Yeah, man. It's been a minute, guys. It's been a minute. I felt a little neglected. I'm always happy to be a part of a great podcast like you guys have got going on, man.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and not at all. We're extremely honored to have you on again, and I've been listening to you guys. You guys are still keeping it absolutely real, and I'm a bit envious of the success you guys have had, but we will get there one day. But you know who I'm not envious of right now, and that is the Brooklyn Nets, and even more so their fans, because I just feel like the Nets are in a really tough spot right now. They don't have a draft pick. They don't have a team that, unless, in my opinion, Brooke Lopez lays out a career year and plays at least 75 games, they have any hopes of making the playoffs. What's it like to be a Brooklyn fan right now?
Well, I think to be a Brooklyn fan is really, you got to look at it twofold. If you're talking about, you know, a Brooklyn Nets fan, New Jersey / Brooklyn Nets fan, this is nothing new. The chaos that's involved, the way management handles situations. You have to start looking at, you know, your general manager skeptically, and no disrespect to Billy King, but, I mean, anything that he does, you have to kind of, you know, put it under a microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you look at your owner, Prokhorov, you know, he's kind of like the Tony Stark of the NBA a little bit. He wasn't afraid to throw money at every conceivable problem that this Nets team now is about to face. And when you look at this basketball team, this is a team that has fallen short of expectations over the last, you know, 3 to 4 years. And you know, really part of it is just misplaced trust in misplaced understanding about what the expectations are for this basketball team. Now, with that being said, are the Brooklyn Nets going to be the worst team in the NBA? No. So at least Jersey Brooklyn Nets fans can, you know, can kind of rest their head a little bit better on that. Does that mean, though, that they're going to have, you know, a Cinderella type of season? Far from it. And this is probably going to be one of the I guess, most daunting tasks for Lionel Hollins, is to get Brooklyn Nets fans to buy into the belief that this is going to be a competitive basketball team in a division that is less competitive, in a conference that's still considered less competitive. However, there is still that small inkling possibility that they can sweep themselves into the playoffs, and you never know what can happen. But this is actually a good time for Brooklyn Nets fans. This is the other side of it, where because the expectations are so low that they're not realistic of them being competitive, that they could actually sneak in and do some damage. And just like the Boston Celtics of last year, the Brooklyn Nets could be this relevant in this upcoming season.
Well, I mean, you were just speaking about the division that they're in the Atlantic Division is just horrendous. I mean, basically you have three of the five teams were the bottom tier teams in the NBA, basically. The team that ended up winning the Atlantic Division didn't even scrape out 50 wins. I'm a little bit confused by the Nets, and you know, they had a failed attempt at making a championship run with Joe Johnson, Wallace, Pierce, Garnett. Then this year they ended up, instead of auditioning younger players, they went and signed vets like Bargnani, Wayne Ellington, Thomas Robinson, and I'm just kind of wondering why they're keeping this quote-unquote charade up rather than, in my opinion, doing the right thing and auditioning some younger players. And, I mean, to that point, too, they shipped off Mason Plumlee for basically nothing.
Well, again, this to me kind of shows a little bit of the etchiness with regards to Billy King. And really, I'm not going to be surprised if there is probably a sense of dissent in management. And, you know, we have seen this with other teams in the NBA when there is a miscommunication, misguidance, misunderstanding about where a team needs to be in the next few years. You know, when Prokhorov decided to buy this team, his expectation is that the Brooklyn Nets should have been playing maybe in one or possibly two NBA finals, win or lose. And for the marketability of a Brooklyn Nets team, that was supposed to move them into the era of they are the basketball team of New York. Let's not be, you know, naive about this. Even though the New York Knicks and the Brooklyn Nets are in the same division, the New York Knicks, as far as popularity goes, New York Knicks as far as basketball dominance goes, even with the Brooklyn Nets going to two NBA finals, and the last time that the New York Knicks had seen an NBA or sniffed an NBA finals was back in the 90s. When you look at this situation, the Knicks are still the most relevant basketball team in the New York market. And Prokhorov wanted a short-term sell, kind of like in the stock exchange. He wanted a short-term sell on what he was getting for this Brooklyn Nets team, hence why he put all of these pieces together, all the money together. Now you fast forward, and with the smoke, as the smoke clears, you can clearly see that this team is not prepared for long-term success. And I get what you're saying. I agree to some level that this is now going to bite them back, because what kind of talent are you looking at for this Brooklyn Nets team moving forward? Even if they decide to keep Joe Johnson, which they did, they kept Brook Lopez, which they did, there really isn't anyone significant that's going to stand out aloud and say, I'm going to be the cornerstone young piece of this franchise. And that's going to be the big question mark moving into the season. They drafted Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, but he's a project waiting to happen. They did sign Shane Larkin, who a couple of years ago helped the University of Miami get into the Sweet 16. He's been a quality point guard. He just never had the opportunity. I think part of that as well, too, was when he was drafted by the Mavericks, he suffered with that broken foot. He had an opportunity to really kind of put his talents on display, and he's never really gotten off the schneid, so to speak, in people's perception of what he can be as a point guard. You know, Thomas Robinson, again, another first-round pick, which everyone looks at him as a first-round bust, has not lived up to his expectations. And the one viable piece who really saw some promise, got a little bit of shine in the slam dunk contest last year with Mason Plumlee, you decide to send him away. And so to me, I just really think that this is all missed signals, like you mentioned, from Billy King. And to me, it could probably be the thing that does Billy King in, because this is exactly the issue that we dealt with Billy King when he was the general manager for the Philadelphia 76ers. When it was time to move certain people, he held on to them too long. And when it was time to bring in young talent, he didn't bring in young talent. He just brought in compromisable pieces for money purposes to really save his job. And so this could be another situation here happening in Brooklyn, which could cause part of the conflict with what Lionel Hollins needs to do to make this team competitive.
So, we're talking about how, you know, the Nets are having a lot of trouble, and a lot of people on our Periscope right now are suggesting that the Nets are the prime example of a team that needs to completely just blow it up and start over. But I'm looking at it, then the Nets have, you know, 81 million guaranteed salaries in the books for this season, but next year they only have 45 million. So they're going to have a lot of room to maybe do some kind of move. Do you think the Nets should do what our Periscope listeners are saying and blow it up, or should they try to make a move and maybe get a big name player next year? I'm sure they'll be in, you know, everybody's going to be in talks for Kevin Durant next year, but do you think they can make a play at a big name player, or do they have to blow it up and start over?
Well, I'm going to parse my words, and I don't want people to get this perception that I'm trying to play favorites to them. Your Periscope listeners, what I would tell you is I want you to take a look at a team right now in New York City who pretty much had an opportunity to do the same thing that they've been doing over and over and over and over again and didn't get it right. They finally do something a little different, even though they didn't care much for their general manager and what he represents. And now they're probably going to make the playoffs, and that's the New York Mets. Mm-hmm. Because the New York Mets MO has always been to throw money at free agents and bring them here, bring them into the spotlight, but they don't play and they don't live up to the expectations of succeeding, which is what this is all about. If you realistically look at it, there has not been a championship in the palm of a New York basketball franchise hands in over how long? You know, like, we're talking 40-something plus years, and you include the Brooklyn Nets into this now because they're in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. You can go as far as to where they were back in Jersey. They haven't had a championship in quite some time, or seen sniffed out championship galore in quite some time. And so you look at this franchise, you look at the coach that you have, Lionel Hollins. Lionel Hollins is the type of coach where he develops his players, and he turns them into franchise type players, like a Marc Gasol, like a Conley. Zach Randolph, who's a tweener, becomes a superstar. I feel that Lionel Hollins needs to take guys that are willing to play in his system and are going to compete hard, play hard, learn the game, understand the game, and in a division that's as weak as the Atlantic Division, to go and just blow everything up in well fell swoop and then think that you're going to reassemble everything back in a year's time frame, I just think it's foolish. Because by doing that, if you don't get it right, this team will look far off worse now with very little recovery and with $40 million cap to move to work with come next year. And name me a player in a superstar status that wants to come to that kind of chaos.
Yeah,
I don't see it, right? The Nets have already failed with Deron Williams. I just don't see where they're going to make the same kind of mistake twice. So I'm glad that even though they're on the books for the 81 now and that they did at least get rid of one of those pieces in Deron Williams, that they didn't completely get rid of everything. Joe Johnson, I still think, is a quality basketball player. And in this division, I still think that this Brooklyn Nets team can be competitive. They're not going to probably be better than the Toronto Raptors. And they may not be better than the Boston Celtics, because I think the Boston Celtics collectively as a team are going to play a lot better. But I think the key is going to come down to Brook Lopez. If Brook Lopez stays healthy, you name me another team in that Atlantic division that has the ability to play Brook Lopez at that five position to compete with them, he can have a great year. And I think it just comes down to the surrounding pieces stepping up, staying healthy and continually playing under Lionel Hollins, who I think is going to make them a much better team than people are giving them credit for.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about Brooke Lopez. It's just it's unfortunate that we haven't seen a healthy Brooke Lopez in a while. And one of the pieces that I really like that the Nets had was Mirza Teletovic. I know last year he had kind of an underwhelming season. He had blood clots. But I was personally a bit surprised to see them withdraw their qualifying offer on Mirza Teletovic. Why do you think they did that?
I think they did that because they understand the situation, and maybe there's probably more to it than just the idea that, you know, if he comes back here, he's going to be completely healthy. Maybe there is a little bit of concern here on what he can bring to the table. Clearly, he's going to look long-term, and, you know, this is not like the NFL where you can get away with non-guarantees now. In basketball, it's pretty much guaranteed. I don't think that they want to be tied down to a situation. You look at the marquee players that the Brooklyn Nets have had that have suffered injuries. Darryl Williams, Joe Johnson, Brook Lopez. These guys are tossing out a ton of money for. There's no question that the Bosnian sniper, when healthy, is about as good as they come as far as shooting goes, which is something that the Brooklyn Nets are going to sorely need come this year, because this team is going to suffer from the perimeter greatly without him being on that basketball court. But to extend offers where it's going to wind up being a long-term thing, that means that they are banking on the idea that he's going to be able to stay healthy, which, again, I think is going to be a very, very big question mark, and I think it's something that Billy King, Prokhorov, they don't want to be tied down to the same situation. You know, the Boston Celtics had the same thing with Jeff Green, and no disrespect to Jeff Green, because I think while he's still, what he brings to the table is great, him being given that offer to me was almost like a mercy offer. He never lived up to the expectations of what the Boston Celtics thought that they were getting from him when he came over from the Oklahoma City Thunder. And while he now has an opportunity to really be successful in a great system in Memphis, I think that part of that has made it made it difficult for Danny Ainge to figure out what to do with him because of the money that they tied him to these last couple of years. I think that the Nets are going to find themselves in the same type of situation with the Bosnian sniper. It doesn't mean that he isn't deserving of it. It just means that I think that they're erring to the side of caution because they really still don't know his status with regard to the blood clots, which can be a career-ending type of situation for him if not treated properly. With hope, he should stay a Net, because I think that the Nets definitely need him a whole lot more than where I think they're leaning on by rescinding that qualifying offer.
The one player I'm really high on, and maybe it's just because I watched the last few, I know, the last few games before the playoffs started last year, there was a lot of race, and the Nets needed to win, so I was watching them pretty closely, and one of the players I really, really enjoyed watching was Bogdanović, and, like, he seemed like maybe in the beginning of the year, maybe in the middle of the year, he was kind of holding back a little bit. But towards the end, it looked like they gave him the green light. And I can't remember who he dropped. He dropped like 27 points on him or something like that. But was that a fluke? And that was just them saying, okay, we need to make this, like you've got the green light, let's go. Or are we going to see more of that from him this year? And maybe he'll be a bright spot for the Nets going forward.
Well, my segue into this thing, but the way I'm looking at Bogdanović, I think he could really be a sharp shooting threat for this Brooklyn Nets team, and I think it's something that Lionel Hollins is actually really kind of keying in on. You know, he popped 91 three-pointers last season, even though he shot somewhere around 45%. I think that those numbers can go up if given the opportunity and given the time. The one thing that I'm really impressed with is his ability to pass. You know, he has 68 assists with the limited time that he was given. And to me, this is a Brooklyn Nets team that has some really different funky pieces. You may not be able to see it in its evolution right now at the beginning because of all of the turmoil from the teams of the past, but this could actually be a good thing to have what the Brooklyn Nets have been sorely lacking. You know, you look at the years when the Brooklyn Nets had the opportunity to play in the NBA Finals 2 years consecutively when they had Jason Kidd and they had Kenyon Martin, they had Kendall Gill. Kendall Gill was their X factor. He was that perimeter shooter that at the time teams were lacking to have. It's like having a Tony Kukoc when you didn't think it was necessary. The fact that the Nets have a Bogdanović on this team, I think, can lend boldly. It's even doubly better if they are able to keep a guy like Telenovic, you know, moving forward. To have these two types of guys with their length, their size, and the ability to shoot the basketball, to me, adds an advantage for them because it makes them a mismatch nightmare. And I think Bogdanović, having the season that he had, second half especially, I think is instilled confidence. Holland is going to look for him to really have an intricate say, if he's not starting, to be coming off the bench to really produce some quality points for this Brooklyn Nets team, which, again, struggled down the stretch in their ability to score the basketball. If it wasn't Brooke Lopez in the front court, the struggling of Joe Johnson shooting and Deron Williams off and on night didn't help this team down the stretch, and they're going to need that, and I think Bogdanović is the guy that they can go to do that. If given the opportunity, I think he's going to be a really good shooter for this team moving forward.
Well, you said it a couple times during this interview that the Deron Williams experiment just didn't work. It's a shame. There's a lot of reasons for it. Paul Pierce had some choice words about what kind of a leader Williams was. But I'm just wondering what the feeling is from fans and the organization, I guess. Are they relieved that the experiment is over?
I think that they're relieved that the experiment is over more from a PR perspective than a player perspective. Let's not take anything away from Deron Williams as a basketball player. There was a reason why, 5 years ago we said that he was considered one of the top three, possibly top five, maybe top three point guards in the NBA at that time. What Deron Williams can bring to the table, very few point guards are capable of being able to do. And at some particular point, usually it's injury that thwarts the ability for a guy to stay dominant the way that Deron Williams is being dominant in his years playing with the Utah Jazz. And then maybe for that brief stint, the first last half of that season after the trade with the Brooklyn Nets, which prompted him to get the big $100 million deal that he received. But at the same time as well, too, playing in the market of New York is not like playing in the market of Golden State, not like playing in the market of even Dallas, where he's going to be, where his destination has landed him now. He is playing in a place where the demand and the feeding frenzy is real. I mean, Periscope might be a nice little might be a nice little ploy, but he was sunk to the depths of being one of the worst players in New York history at one point because of what he wasn't capable of doing and how he carried and conducted himself. There's another player out there in a major market that's suffering the same type of symptoms that a Deron Williams suffers in the game of football, and that's Jay Cutler with the Chicago Bears. So you get the same kind of angst when you think about Deron Williams, a guy getting paid this much money and not living up to the hype and the expectations in a market like New York. I mean, if you're the ownership, you're happy to get away from this thing as quickly as possible. It should have happened really 2 years earlier. But when your money is tied into this type of guy, who's going to take him? Who wants him? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Because there are other players right now who superseded what Deron Williams was supposed to bring to the table. And so I think if you're a Nets ownership, you're glad that this is done with. And I think if you're Deron Williams, you're glad that this is over with now as well, too. And the best possible destination, which could be the worst possible destination for a team in the Southwest Division, it's him coming back home to play where he's from, which is in Dallas. Mm-hmm. So this might be good, not just for Deron Williams. It could also be good for the NBA because now we get back to Deron Williams that I think people have grown to appreciate and love out there in the clandestine land of Utah that suddenly disappeared when he landed on the rough streets of Brooklyn.
And so the other player that I'm kind of wondering how they'll work out is Andre Bargnani. I mean, last year, I don't want to say it was rock bottom, but it was. He didn't play well. You know, he was starting to lose it. Probably didn't have much respect with the Knicks. Do you think he'll be able to bounce back with the Nets? How much do you see him on the court with the Nets?
Well, let me preface this by saying that Lionel Hollins does a really good job of masking the inefficiencies of what one player may have been or used to be. Andrea Bargnani, for a moment, let's just wipe away his top five first round pick status and just look at him as a basketball player. He's a great shooter, but he was never a great defender. He has a couple of post moves, but nothing long term sustaining, nothing that puts the fear of God in the opposing centers that that matched up with them. I mean, listen, coaches weren't even afraid to put small forwards on Andre and Vargnani because he's just never a tough basketball player. He tried to play it off like he's tough, and maybe part of him being Italian, you know, gave off a little bit of that mafioso type, you know, persona maybe. But outside of that, you know, he was soft as pudding playing in the post, which is why he loved to camp out and shoot the basketball, which is why playing for Mike D'Antoni would have been the best thing for him in any, you know, in any situation. But that's not the case here. If you're playing for Lionel Hollins, you got to get your hands dirty. You got to bang. You got to rebound the basketball. You got to contribute. So I'm not expecting much from Andrea Bagnani as far as what we've already seen from him playing with the New York Knicks and even in his final days playing with the Toronto Raptors. I think he's going to come in there to provide an offensive push that most Lionel Hollins teams usually suffer from. He's never had a team that he can rely upon to score points when his team plays so well defensively. And I think this team is going to be predicated on playing solid defense. That's what he wants his team to get back to doing. So Andrea Bagnani is really more of an offensive weapon, which I'm not seeing him showing, you know, a lot of extensive time from. Can he resurrect his career playing in Brooklyn? Possibly. I mean, you know, a lot of rejects wind up, you know, in Brooklyn and wind up getting a little bit of face time from it. But I'm not expecting him to make a lot of noise. Who I'm expecting to make some noise from is Thaddeus Young. Yep. And that, to me, was an important re-signing for the Brooklyn Nets. And if you're Thaddeus Young, you got to look at this as this is really your last opportunity for you to kind of shine. You didn't live up to your expectations when you played for the Philadelphia 76ers. A lot of people were high on you when you came and played for that organization. Then you got moved to Minnesota. Didn't show a whole lot of, you know, anything up there. Understandable, because you were kind of wallowed in the depth of that front court. But now you're playing in Brooklyn, and there's an opportunity for him. There's no Mason Plumlee. There's really nobody else. Maybe Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, but he's a project. This is Thaddeus Young's opportunity to really make some noise on an organization, on a team that's looking for someone to be that guy. Joe Johnson is not that guy. Brook Lopez is a great offensive center, but he's not that guy. This could be Thaddeus Young's opportunity. So he's more the person that I'm looking at to have a resurrection, hoops redemption type path to success because of what he's re-signed for with the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, he's just really got to get that three-point percentage up. I know it's really dropped off over the last couple of seasons. I think the biggest question for me moving forward with the Brooklyn Nets is definitely the point guard play. And one of those questions is, obviously we've talked extensively about this by now, but there's no more Williams. And so you have Jarrett Jack leading the team. And Jarrett Jack isn't a pick-and-roll type point guard. He's more of a scorer, and that's great. It's fine. It's what it is. But you can't win in the NBA if you aren't running pick-and-roll. I think that a lot of Brooklyn fans were probably a bit miffed that the Nets didn't try a bit harder to go after Jeremy Lin. That's regardless of the point. The point is, because Jarrett isn't really going to be running the pick and roll, do you expect to see more ball handling out of Bogdanovich? Is Shane Larkin that type of point guard? You know, how are they going to run that front court or that back court? Excuse me.
Well, if I was Lyle Hollins, I'd probably be, you know, throwing up 10 hallelujahs and thank yous for not going after Jeremy Lin, because he is a defensive coach's nightmare. You know, for a basketball team that needs to play better defense. But I will say, yes, you know, what Jeremy Lin brings to the table for the pick and roll would be catamount. But it then lends to the idea about Lionel Hollins and his direction with this basketball team. And so while Brook Lopez is still the guy that everybody is looking at, it still tells me that Lionel Hollins is not completely sold on Brook Lopez. And I mean, if that were the case, then I'm sure that he would have made a push for Billy King to get a point guard to acquiesce to the skill set of what Brook Lopez brings to the table. I think Lionel Hollins is just comfortable with Jarrett Jack. Doesn't mean that he is happy that it's only Jarrett Jack, because to your point, it really limits their ability as far as offense goes. You know, if you really look at it for what it is, this team is an offensive mess. They got too many moving parts that is singularity in one skill set of their offensive scheme, and they're going to have to try and figure it out, which is why the onus is so much on Lionel Hollins to figure out how to get this team to play better defense. Now, I will say that with Shane Larkin, you kind of get to offset that. I think that he's a much better defender than Jarrett Jack in some ways, and I think Lionel Hollins can make him a better point guard in the sense to play in the system better. that doesn't mean that that is going to be their solution to what they're going to need to be competitive in not just the division but the conference itself. I think that this is where opening up that cap going into next year comes into play. Don't be surprised if Billy King is still the general manager, that he will basically make his primary focus on looking to get a solid point guard to kind of then acquiesce the type of system offensively that Lionel Hollins truly wants to bring to the table. But for now, I think Jarrett Jack is solid because he's been with this team a year. He's watched this as a point guard. He's solid enough. The one thing about Jarrett Jack that gets to me that a lot of people don't seem to understand, he's great at certain points. But to ask him to be the guy over the course of a whole basketball season, I think it's a mistake. And I think that's where Lionel Hollins comes into play and what I was saying before about masking the deficiencies of what certain guards, certain players, do on that basketball court. If you leave Jarrett Jack out there too long, he becomes too much of what you don't need for a basketball team. We've seen that in his career. He's great in moments, but he's not great for the long term. So Lionel Hollins is going to be more on him to figure out how to divvy up those minutes, use his players wisely. Shane Larkin, Jarrett Jack, they're contrasting styles, but with Lionel Hollins, he's one of the few coaches I know has the ability to do that well with the type of team that he's playing, that he has to deal with at this moment in time.
I also kind of really like the Donald Sloan pickup. Maybe that's just me from watching the Pacers, but I'm actually kind of a fan. I think that's an underrated move by the Nets there. But I guess the last question I have is, and it's probably a lot of people's questions, the Nets were kind of at the bottom of the playoff standings for the East, and so it was 38 games got them into the eighth seed. Do you think they can make it into the playoffs again this year, and do you think it's going to take more than 38 wins for any team to make the eighth seed?
I think it's definitely going to take more than 38 wins, and I think now, especially with the change, the new ruling with regards to the NBA playoff seedings, mm-hmm. I think it's important now that you have to take into consideration what that lower half is going to represent. You're just not going to be able to get by with a losing record, I think, and then moving forward. Now, if in the division, you can hope and pray that teams like the Boston Celtics, teams like the Toronto Raptors take a step back, but are they really taking a step back? I think those teams are going to take a step forward. I think that the New York Knicks might actually take a step forward. There's a few wins unaccounted for that I think they may be better. And the only team that I really don't think that there's going to be much change from, unfortunately, will be the Philadelphia 76ers. So if you're the Brooklyn Nets, you have to look at that realistically and say, what do I have to do in order to assure myself an opportunity to be competitive, going through the course of the year and possibly be in the playoff picture? And that you got to win your games in your division, because realistically, that is the only division that they have a puncher's chance in to really significantly put themselves in that opportunity. Say, no one in the Atlantic Division is going to be outright the most dominant team in the Eastern Conference. We already know that. Mm-hmm. So if you're the Toronto Raptors, the Boston Celtics, and the Brooklyn Nets, it will behoove you to dominate whoever you play within your own division. You need to have a dominant record in your division to give yourself a chance to be playing as one of the lower seeds in the Eastern Conference playoffs for this year. It can be done if you're the Brooklyn Nets, but it's going to be a tough hill to climb, especially when we have too many question marks on the health status of your bigger name players. Not your project players, but your bigger name players.
I mean, I agree with you, Cal. I just think there's too many ifs. I do think that they have a chance, and they're going to the Brooklyn Nets are going to be one of those three or four teams really fighting for that seventh or eighth seed. But let's switch gears a little bit. Tell me about the Baseline Podcast. What makes it so fantastic? About your co-host, where people can find it.
Well, the Baseline Podcast, we've been doing this for 3 years. One of the things that's been awesome about doing this podcast is, my co-host, Warren Shaw, he has his own site called Shaw Sports. He's www.shawsports.net. He loves to dig into the numbers. He loves to dig into the analytics. And I just love to dig into the game itself. I love to throw the questions out there. And us combined, man, we've had a really, really great opportunity in doing this podcast, and it's been awesome the people that we've had on our show. We've had you guys on our show, and it's been wonderful, and clearly that will never stop. We've had general managers, we've had players, we've had other analysts from all of the major platforms like ESPN, Fox, SB Nation. It's just been a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to talk with other people who have their hands dug into, you know, this game. And to be able to do this podcast on a weekly basis has been awesome. This upcoming season, nothing changes from that, you know, and we're going to continue to expand people's awareness about things that are happening, not just in the NBA, but in the basketball community. And so we always encourage people to go to our website. I'm sorry, not the website, but to hit us up on the Twitter at NBA underscore baseline, or you can get at me at GamefaceLee or Shaw at Shaw Sports NBA. We're always on there. We're always throwing our opinions. We're always trying to, you know, kind of get the controversy, get the talk going. but it's always with good fun, and it's always with the intent to give people more awareness and more appreciation for how great the game of basketball is right now. It's just a great thing so far.
What's been the biggest challenge as far as podcasting for you?
Oh, man, the biggest challenge is working with an old Mac computer that wants to speak up on me whenever I'm doing in the middle of my editing and stuff.
Dude, I 100%, I'm in the same boat, man. It is so frustrating when you're, you know, an hour in and you go to export and it freezes and crashes on you and you're just like, you got to be kidding me right now.
It's absolutely the worst. You know, or like, you know, I'm playing double dutch with all the wires I got,
yep,
you know, going around on my desk and stuff like that. But I got to say that even with that, it's still been pretty cool because it's just an absolute phenomenon the way podcasting has emerged and has become an intricate part, not just for the everyday listener, but for us involved, you know, in the media, in our ability to outreach people and discuss certain topics. I know we leave ourselves to, like, the bigger networks to kind of do that for us at times, but I think without podcasting, a lot of people would not have a voice and have a say and influence on how we perceive and see things with regards to the sports that we cover. And for me, that's one thing that I've always appreciated about doing the podcasting, and it makes the labor worth it. It's laboring, definitely,
yes,
and it makes it worth it.
I have to say it's a great experience and a fun adventure for sure. I mean, we're still pretty young. We're about, what, 2 years behind you now. We're about a year in, so, but it's fun. But my question is my one last question is, is there as much talk up north maybe as much as there is down here about Melo and the Bulls? Because I feel like that's the only thing I've been seeing on my Facebook the past few days.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, a lot of people up here, it's so funny. If you ever watch some of these movies and they do these, you know, New York movies, I want to say, with the attitude and people and how they perceive things, it's like Jekyll and Hyde. You know, one minute, you know, they're talking about how Carmelo Anthony needs to stay in New York Knicks. You know, he has something that he needs to finish. The New York Knicks is not going to be a good basketball team without the signing. And then now, all of a sudden, after a year, you know, this team looking as bad as they have or whatever the case may be, oh, you know, he should have gone to Chicago. He has no business being here, blah, 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 blah. It's like you buy the bagel, you take a bite into the bagel, and then all of a sudden, all the bagels are rotten. Like, come on, like, seriously. That's how people are, you know, and you just can't think that way. Look, this has been the MO for the New York Knicks for quite some time. They love to flash the cash, and Carmelo Anthony was waiting and salivating for it. If Carmelo Anthony was really about winning that championship, he would have gone to Chicago, no question. But he understands, and he knew what he was getting himself into. I call it the A-Rod complex. I mean, there's nothing different with what Carmelo Anthony did. And if you are the New York Knicks organization, this is what you wanted, so now you have to figure a way out of it. New York Knicks fans, they just need to keep it real and stop, and stop trying to play hopscotch, with their thought process about the motives of Carmelo Anthony. There's no ifs, ands about Carmelo's motives, so there's no reason to prolong that. Accept it for what it is. You know, the one good thing that New York Knicks fans have because of Carmelo Anthony is that you still arguably have one of the better offensive scores in the game. He just needs to stay healthy. Last year, we kind of saw a chink in the armor in his health, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he stays healthy this year, you find me another basketball player in that division that can stop Carmelo Anthony. There's no one in that division. No one from the Boston Celtics, no one from the Toronto Raptors, not even anyone from the Brooklyn Nets or the Philadelphia 76ers would be able to stop Carmelo Anthony if his intent is to score the basketball.
Yeah.
So the New York Knicks have that going for them. And it is in a time where the division may become an obsolete thing because of the rule changes now taking place, that still may count for something because it could mean that the best player in basketball can put a team on his shoulders like he did a few years ago and help elevate that team to becoming one of the more surprising teams in the NBA. I'm not saying that it will happen. I'm just saying at least you have a poker chip that can allow you to say that can happen.
Well, I actually 100% agree with you, Cal. And we, again, thank you so much for your time. Again, you can hit up Cal Lee anytime on Twitter at GameFaceLee. Also, check out the Baseline Podcast. Just go on your iTunes, search Baseline Podcast, and we will have you on again soon. Thank you so much, Cal.
All right, fellas. Appreciate it.
And joined with us to the line right now, we have Griffin Conley. We know you've heard him before. We've had him on the show many, many times. He's a blog editor for the Driving Dish blog. It's on the website. You have to check it out. It's incredibly good. It's at driveanddishpodcast.com. You can hit him up anytime on Twitter at Griffin Conley. Griffin, we're talking about the Celtics today. I know you are a Celtics fan. How are you feeling about this upcoming season?
See, that's the thing, is I live in Boston, I write about the Celtics a lot. I'm actually not a Celtics fan.
I lived in Boston. I think that those Bostonians would not enjoy hearing that.
I mean, I root for them, I guess, because I want to watch a good team. Like, I want them to get good because I live here and I get their games on local television, don't have to watch it on my computer. You know, I don't live and die and bleed green.
Well, okay, so let's get into it then, because you know they've got Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart in the backcourt, which are two really good defenders, and Jay Crowder's a pretty good defender as well. But their front court last year wasn't the strongest on the defensive side, and I know they added Amir Johnson, which was a good start to that fix. How else do you think they addressed that issue in the off season?
Yeah, you know, really, this past offseason to me seemed a little bit like a stopgap for the Celtics, where they didn't really move the needle one way or the other, but they maintained flexibility while also remaining pretty solid. I think they're going to get into that 8 seed, sneak into the playoffs still, like last year. Well, they got the 7 seed last year. But, I don't really think they addressed their needs, which is simply to get a star. That's what they want to do, is get a cornerstone. But they signed Jonas Derebko and, like you mentioned, Amir Johnson to incredibly favorable 2-year contracts that are non-guaranteed for the second year until, I think it's 48 hours after the moratorium begins, so they can shop around for free agents and stuff. So they're going to be really flexible again next year. They're going to be flexible this year if any sort of trade pops up. I bet the Celtics are going to be mentioned everywhere. I like what they've done there. In terms of filling out their front court, I mean, here's the thing, is that the Celtics are deep everywhere, but their ceiling is what it is. Their ceiling is low, their floor is high. It's much ado about very, very little in terms of what they did this offseason.
Well, I like that you just brought up that Amir Johnson's on the second year of his contract is non-guaranteed, because when you look at a team like the Knicks and they brought on Aaron Aflalo, who's had a pretty rough couple of years, it shows the difference in franchises and their negotiating ability, where you had Danny Ainge that was able to get Amir Johnson, who's been really solid, but make that second year non-guaranteed, and then you have the Knicks who had to do fully guaranteed 2 years of Derek Williams, which is great, and Aaron Aflalo. So that's a little bit questionable. But bringing it back to the Celtics a bit, so the Celtics are rebuilding, but when you look at their roster, and you mentioned this a minute ago, Griffin, that they have all these pieces, they're trying to get that star, I still don't know what they're building towards. And so my question for you is, who's their core? Like, who is going to be on this team in 3 years?
Jeez, that's tough. I think pretty much every single person is expendable.
Even Isaiah Thomas?
I think Isaiah Thomas is expendable. I mean, if I won't even come up with a hypothetical, but if the Celtics have an opportunity to land a star, I think they'd definitely be willing to part ways with Thomas if that's what it required.
Questionable, but I can see the logic.
Yeah. I mean, Isaiah Thomas is good. He's great. He's a very quality sixth man for the Celtics last year.
Well, the Celtics weren't really good I shouldn't say they weren't good, but once they added Isaiah Thomas, like, they were dynamic last year and arguably one of the best teams in the East post that trade.
Yeah, no, they took off. I think they had the second best record or something like that post-trade for Isaiah Thomas. Obviously, that's East. In the East, there weren't too many good teams or teams that had quality second half to the season. Isaiah Thomas, he was their best player last year. He carried their offense at points, especially down the stretch. He just ran through and around high pick and roll after high pick and roll. And, they were able to spread the floor. Stevens likes to keep the floor spread. They took off for sure.
So my other question for you is, and I know people have been watching or were watching this pretty closely with Team Canada. I know Kelly Olynyk was playing absolutely outrageous. And I know, just to point one out, he had like a 34-point performance in one of the games. How happy are the Celtics with him and doing that? Do you think he's going to be able to translate that back into the NBA? Because, a lot of the players he was playing against aren't playing in the NBA. So there's always that silver lining.
Yeah. Kelly Olynyk, he's a weird player. He had a really good summer league his rookie year, and everyone was like, oh my gosh, is Kelly Olynyk going to be this great thing? And he's been, I feel like I keep using the same phrases, but he's just solid. He's like everybody else on the Celtics. He was one of those guys. It's funny. Every single game that I watched Kelly Olynyk play, he would come in and he would bang his first three. Mm. He would just drill it. He'd go in every single time. And he'd shoot, I'd say when I was watching, he shot like 70% from three in those minutes. But then you look at his actual percentage and it's something like 35, which is still solid for a center.
I think he was actually... I think he was like number two in the team for three-point percentage last year too, or
was
something
really?
Like that. He was up there, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for all the talk about Brad Stevens liking spacing, which he does if you watch them, it's very spaced out, spread out floor. For all the talk about spacing and three-point shooting and analytics and stuff like that, the Celtics actually don't really have that many good three-point shooters in terms of percentage. I think they're. I don't think they have anyone that's above. Well, it's Richard Repko. I don't think they have anyone that's above 37%.
The team last year shot 32%, and they were actually 27th in the league, only above the Sixers, Denver, and Charlotte for a three-point percentage.
Yeah, no, I mean, they weren't prolific at all by any means. Jonas Repko was actually their best shooter when he came aboard. He had a phenomenal second half of the season with the Celtics. I was a big fan of Repko's game.
Well, he's
an
interesting player too, in and of himself. He hasn't really quite been able to stick anywhere, and you can see the raw talent with him. Bring it back to the backcourt a little bit, though, and you guys were talking about the lack of 3-point shooting that the Celtics had overall, and I think you could probably attribute at least some of that to the fact that you have Avery Bradley on the wing, who he's a fantastic player. He's obviously better known for his defense, and he's pretty niche. He can't really handle the ball. He can't really shoot. And so bringing it to Marcus Smart, who he showed flashes last year offensively. He was definitely good defensively. And do you think that he can improve enough on the offensive end to make an actual, like a real impact on the court this year?
Jeez. I don't think he'll be anything special on offense this year. I mean, his shot is a little wonky. If you look at it, it's not the most fluid thing. And I know Marcus Smart, he shot 33.5% from three last year. I don't even know how this happened. He shot 36.7 overall. That's Rubio-esque. I don't know. I don't think his ceiling is too high in terms of three-point shooting, but he brings so much tenacity on the defensive end, and he does other things good on offense too. He's pretty good at cutting to the basket, moving around, finding little creases. No, that's not a good comparison. I was going to say Tony Allen-esque on defense, but slightly better. Not slightly better. He's better at shooting, or will be better on offense. But Tony Allen, he's sort of like Tony Allen in the sense where he can find little creases and make smart cuts off of other good passers in that way. So I like Marcus Smart going forward. On offense, I just don't really see it him morphing into a elite offensive player.
So do you think Marcus Smart is the Celtics point guard for the future, or are they looking at getting rid of him? Because I know there's some rumors going around that they've been shopping, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think they're at all unhappy with him. I mean, he checks out in all sorts of advanced metrics, despite that, you know, low shooting percentage. So I think they like him a lot. It's just he's not – I think they sort of feel the same way that I do in terms of, is this guy, you know, going to be a cornerstone going forward, or is he just – you know, a solid starter that can help us win when we surround, or when we put him around a, you know, a bigger guy. So I think they're not shopping him around to get rid of him. I think they're using him as an enticing piece to try and land that next big ticket.
Well, defensively, we all know how good Avery Bradley is. So is Marcus Smart, is he projecting to essentially just be a younger Avery Bradley? And there's nothing wrong with that, but in today's NBA, the pace and space, the shooting, if he projects out to be that same niche player that essentially Avery Bradley is, I don't know how the Celtics can build a winning team around that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually a little bit bigger on Avery Bradley, someone who watched him a good amount last year.
Oh, I love Avery Bradley. Like I'm not talking smack at all. I love his game. I just don't think that you can have two players essentially in the backcourt of that same skill set.
Yeah, I mean, they are cut from a similar mold. I think Bradley's offensive game is definitely more refined at this point. He's pretty good at attacking the basket. He settles for mid-range shots way too much. He either needs to just drive in, you know, maybe dribble out. So, you know, do the Steve Nash thing. I'm sure you saw that all the time, Tim, where Steve Nash would go into the paint. He would, you know, probe around and say, oh, my gosh, there's nothing here, so I'm just going to dribble right back out to the perimeter. Or just drive in and dish.
Hey. Sorry.
Hey, yeah, there we go. But he would settle for, he would pull up for these, you know, one or two dribble mid-range jump shots. And a decent amount of them, but not nearly enough to validate his the volume at which he shot it.
The what I would like to see is when Bradley and Smart, if they stay together, you know, get to where everybody's projecting them to be, I'd like to see them against Curry and Thompson. I think that would be really fun to watch. But, you know, you never know if you'll ever see that. So my question is, what can we – and this, I only bring this up because he was actually voted second biggest draft steal by all the rookies in this rookie draft class. What can we see from R.J. Hunter? Are we going to see him many minutes on the court?
Yeah, that's another big question mark, is how much time are these rookies going to get?
Mm-hmm.
Terry Rozier and R.J. Hunter. Because, I mean, Smart and Bradley are definitely ahead of those guys going into training camp and probably at the beginning of the year as well. So it'll be interesting to see how the roster shakes out. I saw R.J. Hunter, you know, in the NCAA tournament. That was it. I saw him a little bit in summer league this year. He's definitely a coach's son. He plays very smart help defense. When I was watching him, he boxes out. You know, he does all the fine points of basketball. He definitely checks out on. He's so weak. Mm-hmm. He's just rail thin. He needs to hit the weight room if he wants to have any chance of keeping bigger, stronger NBA guards in front of him on defense. You know, he's supposedly a great shooter with good range. So, I mean, in all likelihood, he'll do fine on offense as a shooter. He's just so weak, and I don't think he's quick enough to get around people yet. And then if he does get around them, I think people can sort of muscle him off his drive. But yeah, I'm not too sure about R.J. Hunter, but I mean, we'll see. I could be totally wrong.
So it's 2015 Muscle Watch, and you don't think that RJ Hunter's going to be included in that?
No, I wouldn't say so.
So you're talking about the backcourt a little bit, and we'll keep it there before we move it to the front court, because in my mind, when you look at the Celtics, their front court is, to me, the most interesting dynamic of the team. But there's been a lot of calls for Isaiah Thomas to start, but at the same time, he has been so powerful, really, in that six-man role. And all the people that say that Isaiah Thomas shouldn't be, he's not good enough to be a starter in this league, in my mind, are just wrong. But he has been so effective in that six-man role. Should Isaiah Thomas start over Marcus Smart?
You know, that's always something that I have struggled with, the idea of not starting all five of your best players. I think he played phenomenally coming off the bench, and he would probably play just as phenomenally starting as well. But the thing with Isaiah Thomas is he sort of has to have the ball in his hands to be effective. That's not necessarily a bad thing. And in fact, it's a really good thing in terms of carrying bench units. He was really, really good at that. That's something that six men don't get enough credit for, is that they're playing with players who, you know, obviously they're in the NBA, they're good, but they have to carry somewhat less capable players on offense. So and Isaiah Thomas was able to do that. You know, when he was in the game, and Bradley and Zeller and, you know, the other starters were out, he was just running around high ball screen after high ball screen with a spread floor and making plays because the other guys just couldn't really create as much offense. So I sort of like him in the bench role. He's obviously good enough to be a starter in the NBA. I don't know where you saw someone saying that, but whoever it is should be tarred and feathered.
The internet
knows how. No, so then my question to you is, because I'm looking at their predicted starting lineup, so who knows if this is actually going to be the end-all, be-all, but they have Jared Sullinger as their center, Amir Johnson, Evan Turner, Avery Bradley, and Marcus Smart. Sullinger shooting 43% field goal percentage. Amir's got 57%. Turner shooting 42%. Bradley shooting 42%. And Marcus Smart is shooting 36%. And according to ESPN, the league average for field goal percentage is 45%. So pretty much everybody in that starting line is under league average except for Amir Johnson. So that's why I think it would almost make sense to bring in somebody that can at least have more consistent scoring coming forward. But I also see him coming off as a sixth man, because if that's his niche, then that's his thing, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally see that. The Celtics, I mean, they're in terms of efficiency, they actually aren't as bad as their raw field goal percentage makes them out to be. But yeah, they could definitely use a spark on offense at all times. Something that Isaiah Thomas can provide, and he was very good in minutes where he played with the other starters, which was actually most of them, especially going down the stretch and in the second half. So he paired really well with any lineup he was in.
The starting lineup in my mind, if I was a coach, would be Thomas, Bradley, Crowler, Lee, and Johnson, with Turner and Olynyk coming off the bench. And we probably won't speak too much of Evan Turner on this, but I guess you know, he's just one of those players that is a product, I think, of his draft position. And he's a good player, but he's somebody that needs to be really ball dominant. So we're speaking about how Isaiah Thomas needs to be really ball dominant. And can those two effectively share the court together if you do have Isaiah Thomas coming off of the bench?
Yeah, they can, and they did last year. I'm not a big Evan Turner fan. Here's the thing about Evan Turner is you can see the skill. You can see that there's something there. He's another guy that just takes horrible shots. His shot selection is horrid. So that was something that was really frustrating to watch last year. You know, he'd have a wide open three and he'd take a couple of dribbles in, realize, oh shit, I don't have a driving lane, but I'm still going to chuck this mid-range shot. And he was not a good mid-range shooter. Actually, you know, we were talking about Avery Bradley earlier. He actually shot pretty well from 16 feet to the three-point line. Actually, almost elite for guards. I think he shot something like 43% there. But Evan Turner is not in that same boat. He's good on defense when he's engaged, especially on ball defense when he's engaged, but he gets a little bit lackadaisical sometimes, made some mistakes that were a little frustrating. He's just that's the word for it. He's just a frustrating player. Because you know the talent's there. You can see sparks, and you can see these things that he does, and you're like, oh my gosh, that was a great play. But then he'll just go down and do something, you know, head scratching on the other end.
So here's my other question is, because I'm looking at David Lee, and I feel like we should probably talk about him a little bit.
I love the acquisition.
No, I do too, but I'm looking at him. He's 32, and the next youngest player on the team's 28. And I'm just curious as to how maybe David Lee would fit into the timeline that the Celtics have.
Yeah, I don't really see him as much of a... I think he's just a big expiring contract, kind of. Actually, that's not true. He's a good player. I think he can bring some on-court value to the team. By the way, he's definitely going to start. He's definitely going to start over Solinger. He's a better player than Solinger. I think David Lee, something we saw in the finals especially, something that gets overlooked, is he's such a good passer, and he's such a skilled playmaker. Mm-hmm. He keeps the ball moving on offense, and he's such a capable offensive player. His defense, unfortunately, isn't quite up to snuff, but if you pair him with Amir Johnson, that he should be fine. And the backcourt also, the Celtics rollout, is pretty good at defense. Is very good at defense when it's Bradley and Smart, and so he won't have to, you know, be there in the middle to contest driving shots by guards as much. So I actually think it's a good fit for David Lee. I think there can be some symbiosis between for him and the Celtics. But I don't really think he's a big part of their plans moving forward.
So do you think he's more of a trade ship, if you will? Because I mean, I love the Amir Johnson pickup. I really like the David Lee pickup. I think people don't give David Lee nearly enough credit. If you look at the Warriors this last year in the playoffs, there was a stretch in the fourth quarter where the Warriors were able to figure out the Cavs, and I think a large amount of that can be attributed to David Lee, and that he's underappreciated even now. And I do think he is a good player, and he still is a good player. But do you think he's more of a trading chip than anything else?
Not necessarily a trading chip. I mean, his contract is good for salary matching purposes if it does come to that. But I think he provides some good value on the court. I mean, sort of like you said, you know, and everyone was talking about it when he came into the game. What was it? I think it was game three, maybe game two of the finals. And all he would do, and it's something Draymond wasn't doing, Draymond was attacking. And he was, you know, trying to make these, you know, the tough pass or the drive right into the body of Mozgov, things of that nature. And David Lee just got the ball and made smart pass, you know, quick, smart passes as the roll man on the screen roll with Steph. And that's something he can definitely do in the Celtics system with that spread out floor. I think the Celtics have the tools to cover up some of his weaknesses on defense. So I think David Lee, he's not just a trade chip. He is a trade chip, just like everyone on the team. But that's not all he is for the Celtics.
So what do you think their big man rotation is going to look like? You have Amir Johnson, Jerebko, Lee, Solinger, Zeller. There are a lot of Olynyk. There's a lot of minutes and only 96. There's a lot of players, and only 96 minutes to go around.
Yeah, no, that's tough. They're going to have to get rid of some of those guys because that's just a waste of talent. They want to get something in return. But, yeah, shoot, man. I mean, I really like Jonas Jerebko. It's like a bench player that gets 15 or so minutes. Amir Johnson and David Lee are going to be the starters. I'm pretty positive of that. Solinger will get some time. I'm not that big of a Solinger fan, actually.
Is anybody?
I think a lot of people in Boston really like Solinger. So I'll probably get flack from some Boston listeners for saying that.
Only if we post this on Reddit.
Yeah. Only if we get some Reddit
Reddit hate.
Reddit people, yeah. Every time I watched him, he had phenomenal touch around the basket, and he has soft hands. He's one of those guys that has a good feel for the game. But he's not going to, you know, he can start on a good team, but he's going to be your fifth starter or your fourth starter. And he started last year, and he performed admirably, definitely.
I just think it's worth mentioning with the Celtics. I know we always mention it with the Warriors about how deep their bench is and all that stuff, but the Celtics, I mean, their whole team is really deep. Like,
yeah,
there's just so many options.
Incredibly mediocre at every position.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, they are a star away from being amazing. Like, one star.
No. Yeah, they're a star away from being really good, and they're two stars away from being really, 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 really good.
Yeah.
So they have a great coach. I can't believe we've gotten this far without mentioning, or without sort of pointing out that Brad Stevens, in my opinion, is a top five coach in the league.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you: is Brad Stevens their best player?
He might be. He might be their most valuable asset. I've said before, I think he and his staff added anywhere from 7 to 8 wins to the team. With just looking at that roster and seeing that they won, what was it, 40 games in the regular season? Something like that?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable with the pieces they had last year. So maybe not 7 or 8. That might be a little hyperbolic, but... I think Brad Stevens is phenomenal. That was an awesome hire by Danny Ainge.
So your blog is up at driveanddishpodcast.com. You wrote a piece about the Celtics. Can you tell me a little bit about that piece?
Yeah, so I'm doing the same thing with the as I did with the Kings. It's called the Mediocre Files. So we're looking at one team per division that goes in accord with the division you guys are breaking down on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to dive into them a little bit deeper. I'm going to be doing the same sort of formula where I, you know, look at what they lost, what they gained, stuff like that. An interesting statistic that you may not expect. Fun little things like that to break down the Celtics.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Griffin. We really appreciate you. And again, anybody can get at Griffin anytime on Twitter just by at Griffin Conley on Twitter. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will catch up with you next week.
All right, same to you guys.
And again, if you haven't had a chance yet to go over to leave a review on the iTunes, on your iPad or your iPhone, whatever it might be, seriously, we really, really do appreciate it. And we will read your review on the show. We read them all, and it really does help us out. Also, if you want to sign up for the Fantasy Basketball Draft, all you have to do is like our Facebook page at Drive and Dish Podcast, and then the very first post on our Facebook page, just leave your email, and then we'll hit you up as soon as we get that figured out.
Yes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Drive and Dish NBA. You can follow me at Justin C on the air. You can follow Tim at Radio Tim NBA. And Kevin's obviously not here with us, but if you want to follow him, you can follow him at Refuse to Lose.
Refuse to Lose.
Refuse.
Refuse. Like Rafe. You're refusing to do something.
I'm Rafe using.
Yes. RAFUSE.
Oh. USE.
Yeah. Like the boxing thing.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's UCF.
Oh, same.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
It's in the hole.
Hey!
Let's go while we're young.
All right, I think they get the point.